It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair and Arash Madani on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You're not singing along once the microphone comes on?
No, I'm not. I'm going to spare people my singing voice.
There you go. That was fun.
What, captain of having me sing? Or?
Yeah.
No.
Not often you get the captain of the national rugby team in
I'll
studio.
Say this for Tyler Arden. He didn't oversell the fight against Georgia. We just watched it. We just watched it on YouTube. Google Georgia Canada rugby brawl.
Golly.
And I'll tell you right now, the Canadians are in the white uniform. So when he says they got beaten up, the Canadians are in the white uniforms. That's all I'll say. There was a tremendous amount of bloodshed in that match. And it was the starting point for it was a, what would you call that? I mean, that was a clothesline, tackle, horse collar. It was pretty much
Jim Ross or Jerry the King Lawler may have the right word
for
it.
Yeah, it was pretty much the most egregious forearm around the neck I've seen in just about any sport.
Sure.
So, hopefully that doesn't happen again to the Canadian team. The St. Louis Blues and Washington Capitals made a little transaction today. T.J. Oshie going to the Capitals, kind of the focal point of the deal. T.J. Oshie going to the Capitals in return for Troy Brouwer, Phoenix Copley, and a third pick in the 2016 NHL draft. Billy Jaffe, one of our Sportsnet, one of our Hockey Central analysts, is just about to join us, and we'll get his take on this deal that just happened today, and some of the other deals that were made in a very hectic, 24 hours for the NHL teams.
So I wanted to talk to you about this, and I know I'm sure you guys spoke about this ad nauseum yesterday.
Phil Kessel, no.
This is one of the neat stats I read yesterday. Since he joined the Leafs in 2009, Kessel ranked fifth in the NHL in goals.
Mm-hmm.
20th in assists, 15 in points.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so few people upset that he was gone. And I'm not talking media people. How many fans did you hear come out and say, man, we're going to miss him?
Nobody.
Man, I wish they didn't do that.
The only thing you heard was they didn't get enough.
Right.
But it's a shame that Phil Kessel's going. Not a one. Not a one that I heard.
So we're talking about a dude who is fifth in the NHL in goals during his time here. And it's almost good riddance from a fan base that wants goal scorers.
Phil Kessel is an easy target.
Sure he is.
He's, I would argue, there hasn't been another Toronto athlete that has been as easy a target as Phil, because Phil was incapable of speaking for himself. He was incapable of, and I don't mean that. I mean that's just the way he was.
You think it's my fault?
He's a shy guy.
You think it's my fault? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You think it's my fault?
Yeah. Why would I think it's your fault?
No, that's the line.
That line, okay.
Right?
No, I don't remember. Yeah. You know, it all runs together. But I keep thinking back to his first news conference in Toronto, the day that Brian Burke made that deal. And it was at the Air Canada Center. And he was on stage, and I swear to God, and I mean, I even wrote this at the time. It looked to me as if Phil Kessel shrunk by about 3 inches from the start of the news conference to the end of the news conference. And my kind of memory of it was after the formal part is over and it was one-on-ones.
Sure.
It was kind of Phil Kessel pressed up against a wall with cameras and microphones and tape recorders and notepads around him. And I just thought, God, this guy is so uncomfortable doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I felt bad for him. He felt uncomfortable. We've all been in situations where you don't feel comfortable. And I don't think he ever embraced that part of the game. And I'm not saying you have to be Shakespearean and when you're giving answers after a game, or even frankly make yourself available after every game.
But hold on.
But let me finish. There's a way to deal with your media responsibilities, and Phil Kessel never figured that out. And the way is just get it done. The sooner you're available, the quicker you answer the questions, the sooner we're all out of there. And he never really figured that out.
I look at a guy like Marshawn
Lynch.
There's
a fine art to dumbing it down.
Right.
Derek Jeter, no athlete in the history of professional sports will ever be the master of dumbing stuff down, being nice to people, being polite, and leaving you with
nothing.
A thing in your notebook the way Derek Jeter did. But you still liked him because he was good. He was a decent guy. Didn't say anything, but he was a decent guy.
How much of the dislike for Kessel do you believe goes back to A, two ones and a two, that because of the, in part because of the haul they ended up receiving, they watched Zdeno Chara lift the cup thanks to a couple of pieces from that trade. And how much of it is that? How much of it is the not quite the Herschel Walker haul, but the fact that that's what they gave up. And there was one playoff appearance in the Phil Kessel regime here. Now, it's not his fault, but you look over there at what the success Boston had, winning a cup, getting to another.
I think more of it was kind of an anti-American sort of anti-Brian Burkish thing. He was Brian Burke's guy. Put it this way.
I don't think anyone would have cared, Jeff.
Well, no, let me put it this way. I would argue that he, as bad as Phil Kessel was, he's been a much better player for this team than Nazem Kadri.
Right.
Nazem Kadri doesn't get anywhere near the stick, anywhere near the grief Phil Kessel does. Now, I know. Nazem Kadri's not a 50-goal scorer. He doesn't make $8 million a year. I get all that. I think part of the problem was Phil Kessel didn't have anybody to defend him. And once Brian Burke left, I mean, that his last defender was gone. And I really think if Phil Kessel had been born in Kingston, he'd still be here.
Do you really?
I honestly believe there's a large segment of this fan base that will cut a local guy some slack, and they won't cut an American player some slack. I think a lot of it gets back to some of the stuff Don Cherry said and some of the culture that's created around Phil Kessel and around Brian Burke.
Because of his awkward public demeanor.
Well, yeah, he his public demeanor was awkward was the right word. But there were times where you'd hear his teammates defend him. Joffrey Lupul in particular would
Dion a lot.
But there was always a sense that they're just saying that about Phil. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this. There were I don't know if I've seen an athlete in Toronto that it's been as easy to believe the worst about than Phil Kessel. People believed absolutely the worst things they wanted to about Phil Kessel.
How so?
I think lifestyle things.
I will tell you this. Some of the things. As a guy who covered that team and went to practice, Phil was one of the last to show up on the ice.
Well, he was kind of a sloppy kind of guy.
Always the first to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that everybody equates everything back to hockey. I equate everything, not everything, but a lot of things back to my time working in the front office of a couple of football teams.
Mm-hmm.
And from a work habits especially standpoint and from a business decision standpoint, the guys who are last to show up and first to leave, Jeff, are not going to succeed, A. And B, when speed's the first thing to go, and once the speed goes, what else did he have other than that rocket shot?
Yeah.
Does he get the rocket shot off without that speed?
Well, I think he's going to be lights out for Pittsburgh. I mean, this is going to be one of those deals. I'm not looking forward to. I'm not looking forward to doing the Jeff Blair show in January when Phil Kessel's got 35 goals and people are going, well, they didn't get
he
enough.
He won't have that in 2017.
Oh, we'll have a little bet. We'll have a little bet. Billy Jaffe of Hockey Central joins us on Primetime Sports. Hello, Mr. Jaffe.
Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
We are well. I'm just sitting here. I made the point that I thought on my show sometime in mid-January I'm going to be fielding calls from enraged Leafs fans. Now, I threw out 35 goals for Phil.
Couldn't that be any day, though?
Well, yeah, that's true. but Mr. Medani doesn't think Phil Kessel gets 35 goals in a year with Pittsburgh. How do you think he does?
Oh, well, I can see him, fellas, getting 35 goals. It's just a question of how the team is going to be defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Is Chris Letang, is he well? To me, the biggest wild card there is Olli Maatta. How well does he come back? How well does... If this team can exit the zone with speed, then they'll be... Not only will they be good, they'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I should say it the other way. They'll be fun, and I think they should be good. I don't know about great. This team just seems to have a little bit of a... You know, there's a little... I don't call it a dark cloud. What is it? It's a question mark. It's like the Riddler. It's kind of hovers above them regularly. You know, what type of team they're really going to be. But if Maatta and Letang are healthy, I think that only helps guys like Phil Kessel out. Because if they get the puck to him with speed, I don't think your fans, you know, listening would disagree. He can be pretty damn good then.
Yeah.
Really, really good then when he gets it with speed and he gets that shot off in stride.
Billy, what is it with this guy? I mean, you've done a lot of Boston television. You know that market inside and out. The moment they got rid of Kessel, it was almost as if it was a joyous time with the Bruins, with the Bruins fans.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who in his... whatever, 6 years in Toronto, was fifth in goals, top 15 in points in the NHL. And people couldn't wait to see him leave the city. What is, you know, Jeff thinks it's a Canadian-U.S. thing. I don't. The guy was an American. He went to Boston. They were elated when he left. What is it about the personality of this dude that the production is there and there's next to no love?
You know, here's the thing. A lot of times we as a general... you know, mass public or whatever you want to call it, this public society, we're obsessed with celebrity, right? As a society, we're obsessed with it. And what do? We think that these people, and I'm speaking in very general terms here, so I'm sure I'll offend somebody by saying this, but we look at these celebrities as being perfect, right? As being whatever. And Phil Kessel falls into that ultra celebrity in wherever he is, high draft pick, first Boston, then Toronto. We think that he's perfect, but then we see kind of his work ethic at times, and we see his kind of his overt look, his give a heck meter at times. And because of that, even though we're obsessed and we think these people should be perfect all the time, at times we forget that they're human. And, you know, Phil Kessel to me is a guy that I think he's better than people give him credit for. I really do. And by the way, he's a much better passer of the puck than people, at least some people, give him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a fantastic puck distributor. He's got a great saucer pass, and he moves that puck beautifully laterally, in stride too, just like his shot. But we see his facial expressions. We see sometimes his body expression. We see him not looking like what we consider a true NHL star to look like, right? You know, it's more beer league than it is NHL league.
Yeah.
And we hold it against them. We as a society hold it against them. Now, I'm not taking him off the hook at all. I mean, there have been some times that he has said some not smart things, and he hasn't also come through at all times. So, therefore, he becomes the punching bag, the pinata, whatever you want to call it. He becomes that because he gets paid a lot. We expect a lot. We think he should be one way, and he isn't. He's just not that way, and I don't know if he ever will be that way, at least meaning that expectation way.
Billy, what do you make of the trade that the Capitals pulled off today with the Blues? Brouwer, Copley, and a third-round pick in 2016 going to the Blues for T.J. Oshie. I mean, I think T.J. Oshie fits in nicely in the Capitals scheme, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think he brings more offense, more complete game than Troy Brouwer, who's a pretty good player. But I don't know. Would you guys agree on a really good team? And I'll go back to when he was with the Blackhawks. Troy Brouwer's a third-line guy regularly.
Mm-hmm.
He's a third-line guy. At times with the Caps, he plays between the first and third lines. And that's no disrespect to Troy Brouwer. I take him on my team. I take him on my team a lot, any day. But I think TJ Oshie brings a more complete and especially more offensive-minded game. He brings perhaps as well a little bit of a flair. Even though Oshie played in St. Louis, that whole Olympic thing and the shootout brings with him a bit of a flair, perhaps media-generated, but still Washington Capitals with Ovechkin, you know, aren't afraid to have that type of, kind of they like that. You know, Ted Leontis likes that kind of flair, that kind of presence around his team. I think that this is a guy in Oshie that will bring a little more speed to than Troy Brouwer, and the giddy up to the game is something that the Caps want to continue to progress at. So I look at this and I say, for the Caps, they get the perhaps that right wing to complement on the top, at least top six for sure, maybe the top three on that top line. And for the Blues, they move some money, and then they get a more a little bit more of a grind type guy, a little more attitude type guy. You know, maybe there was a little bit, I don't want to say an issue of leadership there, but I think a change had to be made in St. Louis. You know it wasn't working.
Yeah, I was going to say, Billy, you know, there are some teams, you look at them from a distance, and I mean, I'm certainly not up close with the St. Louis Blues, but you see what's happened to them in the playoffs, and I don't know, you just wonder if that's a chemistry experiment that's just gone bad. You know, like there's something, there's something missing there.
I don't know if it's gone bad. I just don't think it's gone as well as they'd hoped.
Okay.
How about that? I don't think it's gone. I don't think it's gone bad because pretty darn good team still, right?
Yeah.
And they did some really good things. And I know regular season to some people doesn't mean squat, but they've been good. I mean, they've also run into some pretty darn good teams come playoff runs, and namely the Chicago Blackhawks a few times over the years. But I look at that team and I say, okay, the mix, sometimes you need to tweak the mix. To me, this is a pretty significant tweak. Whether they're done moving or not, I don't think they are. I think they'll make another move there in St. Louis. They're pretty happy with their defensemen there. Obviously, Barrett Jackman being gone now as he went away and signed in Nashville for a couple of years. But I think that this St. Louis team needs a bit of a change. I need a little shock to the system, a little outside the comfort zone, so to speak, type of thing. And just getting back to Washington, though, as well, I mean, it says to me that they think, you know, that they brought in Williams and now Oshie, that they're not going to re-sign Troy or Joel Ward there. And they move, so they make their, you know, they're adding to their wingers there. And by the way, Oshie can play center or wing. You know, he can play both. But it says to me they're not going to sign him. And I think that, you know, and the Caps are, they're not much different, fellas, not much different than the Blues. And that, you know, they're using your experiment analogy where this is time not to blow it up, but this is time to give it one pretty good big tweak. You know, add a little something different here this year and see if you can get that experiment right this year.
Billy, because the Cup Finals were so entertaining, because Tampa was flying, because the Blackhawks ended up becoming the dynasty story, because of Duncan Keith's heroics and because of Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, we almost forgot how close the Anaheim Ducks were to being there. They bring in Bieksa. What else do you believe needs to be done there to take that next step forward?
Well, they're going to get some swagger with Bieksa, definitely some confidence.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have guys that have won the Cup there and
sure,
when they were younger, and the Getzlaffs and the Perrys. I just think that they need to look at themselves and they need to say in Anaheim, all right, we thought we were in a good spot. Now we realize how hard this thing being the Stanley Cup is to win.
Yeah.
Not that they let the pedal off the metal to the Hawks. I just think the Hawks finally decided, you know, the Hawks were a slow starter all year long, right? And I'm going on a tangent here, but the Hawks, they weren't the best team. You guys know that, but they were slow starters even against Nashville in the playoffs. They were slow starters. I think they turned it on more than Anaheim, you know, burped it up type of thing or turned it off, that type of thing. But with that said, I think this is a reality check. They said, you know what? We didn't take advantage of it. Our stars need to be better. Getzlaff needs to be better. We have a little more swagger. We add a guy like Bieksa who will give them some snarl, some attitude on the back end, a bit younger than Beauchemin leaving there. What has to happen? Well, I think they have to say, all right, we thought we were good, and we were good, but we weren't great. The Blackhawks were great. We were good to very good. That's what needs to happen, that reality check.
So internally, it's everybody elevate once the spring rolls around. It's not necessarily about bringing in another piece or two?
Bob Murray's not going to stop moving ever. He moves, man.
Right.
He moves. I've known Bob for a long, long time. But I think that for the most part, I've always wanted to see their defense get better. And I became after all year long. And I became after watching him, Hampus Lindholm, I became a huge fan of it. I don't have it in front of me. So forgive me if I'm wrong by a year. What is he, 22 now? Maybe 23?
Yeah.
I think he's 21 or 22. This guy is going to be, I think, a stud defenseman. I don't mean like a guy who's good. I mean really good. I think that's just going to develop a year. So, yeah, I think guys need to elevate a rush. I think they need to take that next step. You know, Vatanen, take the next step. Anderson was really good for this year, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was really, really good, but he wasn't great when it mattered most.
Yeah.
Getzlaff was excellent all year. Excellent. But when it mattered most, he wasn't. They need to get everybody that next elevation, that next level.
What the hell's going on with the team in your neck of the woods in Boston?
We don't have enough time. You guys are going to be into the overnight show if you want to keep talking about what they've done. And you want to talk about the ultimate roller coaster ride with the Bruins. And Donnie Sweeney, I think, said it best, the new general manager here. He said it to the media last night in a conference call. He said, look, I told the other executives around me. I told the other the scouts around me. I said, you better buckle up because it's going to be a bumpy ride getting to where we want to go when this thing gets started, meaning the draft. And then it's translated or transcended into yesterday in free agency. And it has been absolutely, the ultimate airplane turbulence at times with the Bruins and their fans here in the last few weeks. And then it's also been beautiful blue skies at times. I mean, it's really probably too many of your listeners are too young to understand this, but you want to talk about the ultimate split personality, Sybil type situation here the last few days. But people wanted to absolutely, they were lambasting the Bruins and their management, and then they're cheering them. I mean, from minute to minute at times. Listen, Don Sweeney, what he's trying to do is trying to get himself or his team, into a situation where there's flexibility to address some things immediately. And I always say this, and we always hear the analogy in sports, fellas, it's better for a clean break than a sprain, that type of thing.
Right.
Well, I think it's better that Don Sweeney acted immediately and didn't linger.
No, that's true.
Immediately, basically broke the leg toe, so to speak, and then the rehab's a lot quicker than the lingering sprain. And now he's able to do things, and he's still going to do more. I mean, look, I wasn't sure about long-term Matt Beleski. I wasn't. I said, you got to be careful here. 1 year of 22 goals. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Last year. But when you look at the 3.8 hit, it's only 2 years of a no trade. Well,
that's reasonable.
That's a good move. Right. That's very reasonable. And then, the Dougie Hamilton thing, fellas, and I'm sure you've talked about it or on your air, people have talked about it ad nauseum now. I'm a big Dougie Hamilton fan. Got to know him well, but it was pretty evident that Dougie didn't feel like that his future was with Boston. I don't think it got acrimonious. I just think it got both sides had a realization pretty quickly after the season that it probably wasn't going to take or wasn't going to last as long as perhaps the perception was. So you make a move. Could they have gotten more back? I can't answer that question. I can't answer it. Could the Blackhawks have gotten more back from Saad from another team? I can't answer that. I wasn't in the room on the calls. But Donnie Sweeney felt he had to do what he had to do. And in that regard, I tip my hat to him. I think the Lucic trade, fellas, ends up becoming a very good return for a player that you were not going to re-sign or at least have an incredibly hard time re-signing him here for what he probably felt that he was worth or what he could get on the open market. You get two first-round picks back because you end up trading Martin Jones to San Jose and two legitimate prospects. This kid, Colin Wilson, is supposed to be excellent. the defenseman coming up from the American League from the Los Angeles Kings. I mean, he's supposed to be. I haven't seen him play, but I talked to people that played with him in Manchester. They said excellent defenseman, great skater, moves the puck up the ice, ready for the next step. We'll have to wait and see how that translates to the NHL. But you know, two picks, two first picks, and two prospects. Two high prospects.
That's not a bad
return for Milan Lucic.
Yep, it's not a bad haul. Hey, listen, we appreciate you doing this, Billy. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Happy Canada Day and happy 4th to any of the American fans listening. I know a lot of people do. Have a great, great start to summer.
Happy 4th to you as well. Take care. That's Billy Jaffe of Hockey Central joining us. And the NHL business continues. So does the baseball business. The Toronto Blue Jays doing a nice bit of business today, I'm sure, from their point of view. We're told that they've announced that they have signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a 16-year-old outfielder. The dollar figure being thrown around is $3.9 million. Matthew Murata is an advisor to the Guerrero Academy, and he's known Vladimir and been around Vladimir Jr. probably longer than just about anybody. He wasn't in the Guerrero family, and he joins us in Primetime Sports. Matthew, thanks so much for doing this today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I know we're not going to talk terms. I want to ask you this, though. The Blue Jays International Scouting Director, Ishmael Cruz, just spoke to the media, and he described Vladimir Jr. as a, quote, difference maker with the, quote, potential to be a special player. You've seen this guy a lot. I mean, you've helped post some of the footage that we have on our website showing him take a swing, swinging. Tell me about this 16-year-old kid. Give me a scout's eye view of 16-year-old Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Well, the best way to describe him is really to look at his dad. You know, he has every tool that his dad has, and I mean, if you look at their two games, they're practically identical. So he can hit with power to any side of the field. You know, he just hits naturally. He's got a great arm like his dad had. He's working on it, stealing bases like his dad was able to do. Mm-hmm. But obviously he gets most of his recognition for his bat and, his, you know, everything he can do as a hitter.
Has his dad been around, you know, through the development process with this kid?
Yeah, so the academy is down in Vladdy's hometown. Where Vladdy grew up is where he still lives. And his brother, Wilton, runs an academy with roughly like 20 kids. So they train every single day of the week and work out. So actually the batting cages where they practice in the morning is actually in Vladdy's backyard. So
no kidding.
Yeah.
What type of kid is he?
He's a good kid. He's really confident. He feels like he was born to do this. His dad obviously, you know, made a good living. So when his dad was going through it, the motivation was doing it for his family to get him out of poverty. And Vladdy Jr., you know, he's doing it because he loves the game and because he wants to live up to his family name. So he works hard. He works harder than everybody else. And, you know, he's really confident in his ability.
Matthew, how busy was that feeding frenzy of teams that had interest in this kid? How many teams came after him and said, you know, put the recruiting pitch on pretty fierce?
Yeah, well, in the Dominican, you know, you pretty much see scouts from every team. So every single team probably saw Vladdy down there, probably dating back to when he was 13 years old. The teams watch him and then, you know, check up and schedule workouts with him and come see him practice at the academy and, you know, that type of stuff. So he was seen by everybody all the way up until the very end. And, yeah, he definitely had a lot of options. And, you know, every team that could sign him would have loved to sign him.
You know, one of the things, Matthew, that I've had people tell me is that one of the things that really worked in Vlad Jr.'s favor is that you guys were organized. You know, you had stuff together, right? I mean, we know that a lot of teams were after him. We know that teams always fall over each other when they're trying to sign kids like this. But sometimes it can be a bit of the Wild West in the Dominican Republic. And that's just because that's the way the business is done. But I've been told that you guys had stuff so well organized that that was part of the reason that so many teams are able to get involved here, because it made sense. You know, they were dealing with people who knew what they were doing. They were dealing with people. I mean, there was a logic to their approach. And it wasn't, you know, you weren't talking to 10 different guys, right, as sometimes happens in the Dominican Republic.
Right, yeah. Well, like you said, the Dominican is the Wild West. So Wilton is, you know, an extremely honest guy, an extremely religious guy. So he does everything by the book, which is really beneficial to the kids, and the teams can, you know, trust him, and he can trust the teams, where mm-hmm. you get some trainers down there that are lying about ages and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, his honesty is really what helped him, helped Vladdy get through it so smoothly and, you know, had everybody know what was going on down there.
Matthew Murad is the operations advisor for the Guerrero Academy. What was Vladdy's reaction when this was all done, Vladdy Sr.?
Yeah, he's extremely proud. I actually did an interview with him that I posted on Bleacher Report a while ago, and, you know, he wants his son to do one better than him in every single thing that he does. So one more All-Star game, one more home run, one more Silver Slugger, everything like that. So they're extremely happy, extremely blessed to be going through it, and looking forward to the opportunity to have another Guerrero in Major League Baseball.
Well, we're certainly hoping that he makes it up here, and we're looking forward to that. Listen, Matthew, we appreciate you joining us. I know it's a busy day down there. It's been a busy day for the Guerrero family. And on a personal level, if you're talking to Vladdy, say hi to him for me.
Hi, no problem. Thank you.
It's Matthew Murata. He is the baseball operations advisor for the Guerrero Academy in the Dominican Republic. He's one of the advisors with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 16-year-old Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's now $3.9 million richer. And it's interesting he mentioned Wilton Guerrero, who also played for the Expos, Vladdy's brother, and a completely different guy than Vladdy. Vladdy was really, it wasn't withdrawn. I loved dealing with Vladdy. I mean, he was always smiling, and, you know, as I said, there was the English thing. I think we kind of had a nice little rapport that we understood. I think most of us who covered him on a daily basis understood what he understood. Wilton was kind of a smaller guy. He played for the Dodgers as well.
Yeah.
And just like, just so likable and so just a really, really decent sort. And I have to admit, I didn't realize that he was even involved in the Academy. And I'm looking at a picture now, and Matthew in the Academy has posted a picture, and there's Wilton Guerrero. And it's kind of cool. He's a pretty decent guy. So, good in the Guerrero family. And
I'm just flipping through the Rolodex here, and I'm trying to think, has there been a 16-year-old male athlete more wealthy than Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
I don't know. Probably some soccer player someplace.
Yeah. It would have to be probably only soccer.
Yeah. We got to scoot when we come back. We're going to continue our discussion. It's Primetime Sports, the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You're the worst.
I am the worst. I do like singing. What can I say? I just don't do it very well. Just a few minutes away from the Blue Jays and the godless Boston Red Sox at the Rogers Center. The Jays looking to get a split of their four-game series against Johnny Farrell's last-place Red Sox.
Dream job.
Dream job. I just like saying that.
Yeah.
Someone did point out to me that I do call them, when they lose, John Farrell's Boston Red Sox, and when they win, I just refer to them as the Boston Red Sox. So there you go. Anyhow. That's next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. The Jays and Matt Boyd going up against the Red Sox and Wade Miley. And the Jays should put the boots to these guys tonight, because Wade Miley's not very good. Kurt Heelan of NBC Pro Basketball Talk joins us on Primetime Sports. Kurt, thank you for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's good timing. Dwayne Wade, 1 year, $20 million. That didn't take long.
You know, in the end, they were going to...
With Miami, I might add. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. These two teams needed each other more than anybody else needed Wade, basically. So this is like... this is just one of those situations that was going to work itself out that way, that, that eventually they were going to figure out how to make this work. And it's an interesting solution. Wade gets extra money this year. I mean, he was going to make 16. Now he's going to make more. So he feels a little bit whole for all the sacrifices he made to bring, you know, bring the big three together and allow them to recreate next year. Plus, now he comes, like, they can just, you know, sign him for less or do whatever they need to do next year. They're going to have a lot of cap space in the year that, well, I mean, granted, everybody's going to have a lot of cap space, but when they go big game hunting like everybody else next year, it gives Pat Riley flexibility.
For Anthony Davis to sign the contract that he did, Kurt, was that a bit of a look into the crystal ball to forecast what perhaps teams may feel the cap may end up being that we can afford to throw that kind of bread at a kid?
You know, it's actually, I think, a combination. Great. This is my favorite. I mean, it's kind of the obvious. I mean, if you have Anthony Davis, if you have the guy who's going, look, right now he's what? I would say argue the third best player in the NBA. You can make a case for another number if you care to. But to me, he's the third best guy in the NBA. By the end of this deal in 5 years, he's probably the best guy in the NBA. I mean, he's
sure.
That good.
Yeah.
To me, this is a great deal because, A, he's coming in. It's a 4-1, but he's coming into that situation where he's like, hey, I'm now getting paid in that kind of, I've set my family up for generations way that guys want. I mean, it's like, hey, I'm now set for life. My kids are set for life. My grandkids are probably set for life.
Mm-hmm.
That matters. But on top of that, look, now, you know, they've locked him in at this salary cap, which is, you know, as I'm sure you guys have talked about plenty, it's about to spike. You know, it's 69 this year. It's around 90 next year.
Yep.
It's around 108 the year after that. Suddenly, they've got all this maneuvering to bring players in around Anthony Davis and make this a free agent destination. And suddenly, look, New Orleans, as odd as it sounds, is going to be a free agent destination. Hey, who wants to play for Alvin Gentry, a guy players love? Free-flowing offensive system. And who wants to play with Anthony Davis? This is going to be a spot where they're going to be able to get guys in the next few years. So I think it works for both teams. It's, like I said, it's my favorite signing of this of this free agent period, because Anthony Davis, if he'd come to them and said, hey, 2 years, then I want to be back on the market. I want my cash.
Yeah.
They would have given it to him because he's got all the leverage.
Yeah.
He took the deal that's best for everybody.
The one issue there in New Orleans, and I don't want to get too inside the situation with their organization, with the Saints, is that Tom Benson, the owner of both teams, is in bad health, and there's a major issue going on there with the family and who's going to be in charge of this whole thing. To me, that's the only thing that could potentially break that thing up. But outside of that, from a basketball standpoint, they're set up.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you saw this. A judge ruled recently that Benson's wife is the, you know, he changed it without, again, nothing will get Toronto fans to tune the radio like talking the details of New Orleans sports.
Yeah, exactly.
The judge ruled that his wife gets to take over control, which is at least some level of continuity. She's going to keep pretty much what's there because she's been the person largely pushing the agenda for the last little while. So I think you can see continuity there relatively. But, yeah, it's certainly uncertain.
Conversation with Kurt Helin of the NBC Pro Basketball Talk. Kurt, here in Toronto, of course, we're still trying to we're not really trying to figure out what Damari Carroll means. I think most of us know what it means, and most of us are pretty happy with it. There's some talk that the Raptors may be kicking tires on Wesley Matthews as well. Where do you see this team going? Because, like I said, I said on Twitter, anything that moves Terrence Ross farther down the food chain is fine by me, and I really mean that. I mean, I Terrence Ross has had his chance here. Terrence Ross could have, when DeMar DeRozan was hurt last year, Terrence Ross had a chance to really write himself large in this team, and he evaporated. You kind of like what the Raptors are doing, don't you?
I did. Actually, I had, I put out today on PBT's extra, our video thing, that, you know, they wanted my top five picks, and Toronto was right in there, or top five signings at the start. The Carroll signing was right there because, A, like you said, I agree. Look, I like Terrence Ross, the athlete, but you've got better options, and now you've got a lot of better options.
Mm-hmm.
I think, look, the team that Masai Ujiri's always tried to build have been small, fast, you know, he's one of the athletes. He's one of the guys who are – he's one of the one more like, you know, not, I don't want to say the old Steve Nash sons, but he wants to build something like that, something like
right.
we saw in Denver that's up-tempo. Carroll obviously fits in with that. He's a, as it's either him or Danny Green for the best 3 and D guy in the league, and they're the best 3 and D guys in the league because they can do more than that. They're not just pure 3 and D guys. So I really like this signing. Maybe a little overpaid in the sense that you maybe somebody else could have gotten him for less, but I think that getting guys – sometimes you've got to overpay at the start of this to get guys like, wow, they've got something up there. I want to be part of that, and other guys kind of follow suit. So I like where they're going. Wes Matthews, again, I – well, if he's not giving a discount, and, he, and all reports are he's not at $15 million a year, the guy coming off an Achilles look. Another, if it's not DeMarre Carroll or Danny Green, it's Wes Matthews in that same kind of role. He can defend, he can shoot the three, he can do all sorts of things. There's a lot of possibilities there for going small, but he's going to be expensive and he's going to come off of that. Basically, that he's coming off Achilles. I don't know how much you're going to get out of him the first year.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd go there. I know that the Mavericks are kind of the front runners there. It'd be interesting to see. It wouldn't be a bad fit if you're going small and running, but. He's going to be pricey.
Kurt, I keep wondering, is DeMar DeRozan a Raptor this time next year?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't think they're opposed to that, but he's certainly the kind of guy where they'll shop him around, especially if Carroll works out and you're thinking, wow, we really, you know, obviously you've got Valanciunas, but you're like, hey, we need a defensive-minded four that can protect the rim a little bit or something, and somebody comes available. Is he the kind of guy you're willing to move to make that happen? I think I hate to say 50-50 because it's a coin toss, but I think he's the kind of guy that has real value around the league and could get you something valuable back that you need.
Mm. Kurt, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Anytime, guys. Take care. And enjoy the summer, man.
Well, that's Kurt Heelan of NBC Pro Basketball Talk.
I just have a feeling there's still... 2 to 3 more moves left.
Yeah, I do too. And it's interesting you asked Kurt about DeMar DeRozan because, you know, we've been talking about this ballooning we're going to see of the salary cap in the next couple of years. And I have to admit, both you and Grange have kind of got me thinking now about where DeMarzan's going to fit in or where DeMar DeRozan's going to fit into the pecking order. With this team. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if he's here. I'll tell you this much. If they don't win a playoff round, he won't be the only guy who won't be here next year.
Well, yeah. Well, that goes without saying.
But
what I wonder is if he's even going to be around for said playoff round. I'm wondering if you know, and I don't know.
I keep getting back to this. It's like
so much of this just has to do with the new CBA, right?
Yeah, but March, April.
But Jeff,
if we started talking
about... went back a year ago, we could have talked about the Leafs the year prior. A year ago, they were right there. They should have beat the Bruins. A year ago, Eugenie Bouchard was the finalist at Wimbledon.
Yeah,
a year ago, I mean, it's what happened last year doesn't matter.
Yeah, I find it... Somehow it just kind of crept up on us. Two years ago,
the Red Sox won the World Series.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
Right?
That's true. I just, I don't know if I'm ready to sort of start picking apart DeMar DeRozan, Kyle
Lowry.
No,
I know. I hear you.
But
I just wonder what's going on down on Bay Street.
Well, it'd be interesting. I do know this, though. DeMarre Carroll makes them a much better team.
By the way, LaMarcus Aldridge has canceled his meeting with the New York Knicks today. That courtesy of David Aldridge from TNT.
God. He's got a meeting. He's got a second meeting with the Lakers where apparently they're going to discuss basketball this time. Unbelievable. Where do you think he ends up? Dude's got to go to... He's got to go to San Antonio.
San Antonio?
Yeah. Got to go to San Antonio.
Wow.
Has to. Anyhow, I'm sure we'll be able to talk about that tomorrow. That's it for us, everybody. Stay tuned for baseball. It's been Primetime Sports, the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.